ஓம் ஸ்ரீ குருப்பியோ நமஹ. ஹரிஹி ஓம். சதாசிவசமாரம்பாம் சங்கராச்சாரிய மத்யமாம் அஸ்மதாச்சாரிய பர்யந்தாம் வந்தே குரு பரம்பராம் சத்குரு சரணாரவிந்தாபியாம் நமஹ. பிஃபோர் வி ஸ்டார்ட் தி நெக்ஸ்ட் சீரீஸ் ஆஃப் வெபினார்ஸ் ஆன் பிருஹதாரண்யக உபநிஷத், ஐ ஆஃபர் மை சாஷ்டாங்க நமஸ்காரம் அட் தி லோட்டஸ் ஃபீட் ஆஃப் மை குரு ஜெகத்குரு ஸ்ரீ பாரதி தீர்த்த மகாஸ்வாமிஜி அண்ட் ஸ்ரீ விதுசேகர பாரதி மகாஸ்வாமிஜி அண்ட் டு சுவாமி பரமார்த்தானந்தா, ஹூஸ் லெக்சர்ஸ் ஐ ஹெவிலி டிபெண்ட் ஆன் இன் ப்ரிப்பேரிங் மை இன்ஃபர்மேஷன், அண்ட் டு சுவாமி தயானந்தா ஃபார் வேரியஸ் லெக்சர்ஸ். டுடே வி வில் டேக் அப் தி லாஸ்ட் ஆஃப் த 10 உபனிஷத்ஸ் விச் ஐ பிளான் டு டூ, namely the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. And the name contains three words, Brihat, Aranyaka and Upanishad. And the primary meaning of the word Upanishad is Brahma Vidya. It has three words, Upanishad. And the benefit, the condition to gain the benefit and the method to gain this knowledge, they are all indicated in the word Upanishad. Even though we have seen the meaning of the word Upanishad many times earlier, I am just only refreshing. Brahma Vidya leads to Brahman. One who knows Brahman by his mere knowledge becomes one with Brahman. Therefore, knowing Brahman is tantamount to reaching Brahman. Reaching within quotations. We are all familiar with all that. So, Brahma Vid Apnoti Param. Nature of Brahman here is Ananda. And taking to Brahman means taking a jiva to Ananda. Therefore, Brahma Praptihi can be translated as Ananda Praptihi. So, we can have two meanings for Shad, Dukkha Nivritti and Ananda Prapti. And the letter Ni, that part of Upanishad, it indicates the conditions for gaining the benefit, the knowledge, Brahma Vidya. Knowledge we can gain, that must be clear and free from doubt and habitual complexes. That is free from viparyaya pratibandha. This also we know. So like jealousy, fear, tension, all that. So such knowledge is called apratibandha jnanam. For this only we have shravanam, mananam, nididhyasanam. So ni of the Upanishad, word Upanishad, refers to various conditions necessary to gain Brahma Vidya. And the term upa, Upa means method of gaining the self-knowledge. The only one method is Guru Upasadana. Going to a teacher with humility, respect, surrender, tadvithi, pranipatena, pariprishnena, sevaya, all that we know. Therefore, reading the Upanishad or the commentaries of the Upanishad will help one gain self-knowledge. So, Upa indicates Guru Shastra Pramana Dwara Prapti. So, Ni indicates the Nischayatmika. The without any doubts. And Shad indicates the Prayojana. Therefore, the Upanishad means a competent teacher, which is Brahma Vidya. This is the primary meaning. Now, Brahma Vidya is a Prama. We know Prama, Pramana, all that thing, we know those terms. Prama, the knowledge gained through Shastra Pramana or Shabda Pramana. This is Vedas. So, therefore, Shastra becomes the Pramanam, and Upanishad becomes Prama the Vidya. Still, the Upanishadic words or text does give the knowledge. The textbooks, the written words, also are indirectly called by the name Upanishad only. The Shastra Shabda, they are the Pramanam, which gives rise to Prama, and the textbooks in the form of scriptures are indirectly called by the name Upanishad also. Therefore, Prama is the primary meaning of Upanishad, and Pramanam is the secondary meaning. In other words, wisdom is the primary meaning and textbook or anything that utilize, that is the secondary meaning. Also, wisdom only will destroy samsara. Hati vritti jnanam eva mukhyarthaha. And gauna arthaha, the secondary meaning is what? Aham brahma asmi shabdaha upanishadhi mukhyate. So, the word that gives the jnanam is called Upanishad. This is the primary meaning and the secondary meaning of the Upanishad. Now, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad occurs in Shukla Yajurveda. Yajurveda contains two branches that we know. the Krishna Yajurveda and Shukla Yajurveda. And Shukla Yajurveda has got two branches called the Kanva Shaka and Madhyandina Shaka. But here, peculiarly, the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad occurs in both the shakas. Between them, there are slight differences. And we take up the text from the Kanva Shaka. The Brihadaranyaka Upanishad is divided into three divisions, namely Khandas, Khanda Traya, Madhu Khanda, Muni Khanda or Yajnavalkya Khanda and Kila Khanda. Main teaching of Madhu Khanda or Upadesha Khanda, it is also called, is Upadesha of Brahmishtanam and substratum of the relative world of interdependence. For this, the Upanishad elaborately discusses the interdependence of the world between the Pancha Bhutas, sun, moon, human beings, all that. So, interdependence of the world revealed by a word Madhu, and through that the Brahman is revealed. That is why it is called Madhu Khanda. In the second Khanda, Yajnavalkya Khanda or Muni Khanda, the theme of the Khanda is Upapatti or reasoning or logical support to the teaching. In Sanskrit, the reasoning is called Upapatti, showing the propriety of the teaching, showing the soundness or the unshakable nature of the teaching. First Khanda is compared to Shravana and the second Khanda to Manana. This is called Yajnavalkya Khanda because Yajnavalkya, Rishi Yajnavalkya happens to be the teacher. Various Shishyas come and go, but the teacher is the same Yajnavalkya. Most of the Shukla Yajurveda, Yajnavalkya has another name called Vajasaneya. Vajasaneyi is his teacher. So he got this name because his guru is supposed to be Surya Devata, Surya Bhagavan. Surya Bhagavan has got the name Vajasani. So Vajam means Annam and Sani means who gives. So Surya alone gives food and energy. Therefore Surya Devata is called Vajasani. So Surya Sishya is called Vajasaneya. So Vajasaneya's teaching is called Vajasaneyi. So entire Shukla Yajurveda is called Vajasaneyi Samhita. And Yajnavalkya happens to be the central in the second Khanda and therefore it is also called Muni Khanda or Yajnavalkya Khanda. And final one is called Khila Khanda. It has varieties of upasanas and karmas, mostly upasanas. This is called the Khila Khanda because Khila means compilation, anthology. So your anthology or companion, all that. So the different upasanas are compiled and joined together in this Khanda. So it is like a mixture. So each of this Khanda is divided into two adhyayas and thus totally there are seven chapters, six chapters. Three Khandas, two adhyayas each, six chapters. So even though lot of upasanas are prescribed, yet Vedantic text is the teaching is the primary content. All the important ideas contained in all other Upanishads, as Mundaka Upanishad, Kena Upanishad, Katha Upanishad, Taittiriya Upanishad, all important themes, they are all found in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Not only that, there are much more ideas seen in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, which are not found in other Upanishads also. So it is an all-consuming and all-containing Upanishad. Qualitatively and quantitatively, it is Brihat. It is great, great Upanishad. It is Aranyakam and it is generally studied in the forest, in Sannyasa Ashrama, after renouncing everything. Therefore, it is called Aranyaka Upanishad. It is studied in the forest by the Sannyasis. And the bigness of the Vedanta is dealt with in fullest extent here. It contains all the important ideas. It contained in the other Upanishads plus much more. Sannyasis and those in Vanaprastha Ashrama generally study this Upanishad. Generally we say that the ritualistic portion of Vedas correspond to Grahastha Ashrama. Aranyaka portion corresponds to Vanaprastha Ashrama and contains lot of upasanas. At the end of the Aranyaka portion, the Upanishadic portion comes, which is generally connected to Sannyasa Ashrama. Therefore, Karma, Upasana and Jnanam are followed in Grahastha Ashrama, Vanaprastha Ashrama and Sannyasa Ashrama respectively. So, the idea is, as a person goes to Karma Khanda and Upasana Khanda, he would have gone through Grahastha Ashrama completely, fulfilling his worldly desires of Artha and Kama. He would have also done sufficient rituals for purifications of the mind. Chittasya Shuddhaye Karma. Maturity is measured in terms of detachment or renunciation. Therefore, Sannyasa Ashrama indicates detachment and renunciation. Only a detached person can grasp the Upanishadic teachings fully. Therefore, Sannyasa Ashrama is called a state of Aranyaka. they can only grasp the Upanishadic teaching and study Brahma Vidya. So the idea is that sannyasa need not be physical sannyasa. Inner renunciation also makes a person a grahastha sannyasi. Krishna emphasizes this in the Bhagavad Gita. Now the contents of Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, it spreads over all the khandas with two chapters each, as I said. And the chapters contain the mantras grouped as brahmanas. Each group of mantras is called a brahmana. Now, just a few words regarding the commentaries also of the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. We are just only introducing the Upanishad now. So, among the many bhashyas, the commentaries, the most famous is by Adi Shankaracharya. It is one of the Upanishad, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, both are almost equal in length. But between the commentaries are various commentators that of Shankaracharya is considered to be, there is a big difference. That's how scholars say. So, we find Brihadaranyaka Upanishad Bhashyam is comparatively bigger than that of Chandogya Upanishad. Generally, Swamiji, he follows Acharya's Bhashya only. But in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad case, he touches upon views of other commentators also based on Shankara Bhashya. So, among them, most famous is Sureshwaracharya's commentary on Acharya's Bhashyam called Brihadaranyaka Upanishad Vartikam, Bhashya Vartikam. It is called Brihat Vartikam. Vartikam is different from Bhashyam. Bhashyam is a commentary of the Upanishad in textual order. So, Upanishad is in sutra form, very pithy and with lot of implied meaning. The sutras are commented upon in the order of the text and the author may introduce certain sentences. When he makes a pithy statement, he has to explain that statement also. Sureshwaracharya's Vartikam contains three parts. One, whatever Bhashyam says, that is Shankara Bhashyam says, it discusses with some reservations. And if Bhashyakara, that is Shankaracharya, if he leaves certain portions from commenting, the Vartikakara may discuss and analyze those also. And then the third part is, he will be critical in his analysis. That means, if he does not agree with some portion of the original commentary, he will openly say that also. He will also show his disagreement and he will warn his fresh comments, justifying the reasons for negation. This is difficult when the Sishya is writing the Vartikam of his own Guru's Bhashyam. Here alone the intellectual honesty is really tested. Often Sishya will have emotional attachment to the Guru. Sureshwaracharya does differ in certain places. While not agreeing with the original commentary, Sureshwaracharya is Sutrakara and Adi Shankaracharya is called, because Brahma Sutras, Adi Shankaracharya is called the Bhashyakara because of all his Bhashyas. And Sureshwaracharya is called Vartikakara. And in these places, he very openly says, he criticizes. But in his view, certain flaws are there in Shankaracharya's commentary. So, in these places, my Vartikam is better definition while not agreeing with the original commentary. He will openly say that. He is famous for his Vartikas. He has written Vartikam for Taittiriya Upanishad Bhashya. He has for Brihadaranyaka Upanishad Vartikam and Dakshinamurti Sotra Vartikam. So, in the name of Manasollasa, all that thing he has written. So here, interesting thing is, the Upanishad itself is big and Upanishad Bhashyam is still bigger. And when you go to Vartikam, it is still bigger than the Bhashyam. And that is actually another thing, another commentary on the Bhashyam, on the Vartikam, that is called Parimalam also. So around 12,000 verses are written in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, this thing in the Vartikam. Half the size of Ramayana almost. So this Bhashya Vartikam is so great in length. Length of Vidyaranya Swami, he has written a Bhashyam on Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, Upanishad itself on the Madhyandina Shaka, the Upanishad coming in the Madhyandina Shaka. Vidyaranya would have gone through the entire Upanishad and also Shankara's work on the subject and the contents of the Upanishad before he wrote his commentary. Now let us get into the introduction on Shankaracharya's commentary, because the very introduction to Brihadaranyaka Upanishad contains a famous portion known as Sambandha Bhashyam. It is about 2 pages only, but yet it's considered very important. Sureshwaracharya's Vartikam on the introductory chapter of Shankaracharya or the Sambandha Bhashyam is also very important. It contains 1000 slokas. Now we will see the gist and the essence of the Sambandha Bhashyam. So in this, the subject matter is the relationship between Karma Kanda and Jnana Kanda of Veda. This is a very controversial discussion. Therefore Shankaracharya discusses this in detail. He gives as much pramanam as Jnana Kanda of Upanishads. That means we should not say Upanishads alone is pramanam and dismiss the karmakanda as just a ritualistic blind belief, superstitious kind of actions. Either accept the whole of Veda as a pramanam or reject Veda as a pramanam. Accepting the Upanishadic portion and rejecting the ritualist portion is not proper. That is Shankaracharya's claim. If karmakanda is a pramanam, then what is the meaning of the pramanam itself? When Veda is pramanam, the Purva Mimamsakas, who analyze the rituals, they say that Veda's primary aim is to perform karma and gain the phala, punya and all that. They say Veda's main business is to do karma. Veda is karya pradana and vidhi pramana, karma pradana. Veda, while suggesting some action, making it also optional sometimes. And Veda's prescribes action that are compulsorily to be done, failing which it will result in papam. That's what they say. This is the view of the Purva Mimamsakas. At the same time, they also argue that wherever there are statements of fact, they are all unimportant. And they are apramanam or arthavada. They argue that statement of action is important and statement of facts is not that important. It is their argument. There is a sutra in Purva Mimamsaka that entire Veda is meant to create action on the part of all jivas. If there is no action suggested in a portion of the Vedas, such portions should be ignored. That is what they argue. From their view, Tattvamasi is an unimportant statement. It is not a statement of action, as it is only a statement of fact without any benefit, according to the Purva Mimamsakas. They state that the statement of action is important because they give us some benefit in the form of removal of sorrow and give some pleasure. Acharya refutes this view and says, Veda Vakyam is Karya Pradhanam. For example, when I say, I like this dish, it is implied that I want more of it. Similarly, when I say, Swarga is good, they are also important. So the statement of facts is called Siddha Bodhaka Vakyam. At the same time, the statement revealing action is called Karya Bodhaka Vakyam. Thus, when we say Veda is Pramanam, two different people take to two different views. Purva Mimamsakas, they say Veda is Pramanam in the case of Karya Bodhaka Vakyam and is not in the case of Siddha Bodhaka Vakyam. Shankaracharya gives an important example. He says, the very fact that a Jivatma survives death is a fact revealed and known from Karmakanda of the Veda. Karmakanda prescribes rituals which will lead to Swarga after death. That means I must be surviving death, which would mean that death is not the end of Jivatma because I go to Swarga Loka, I am in Swarga. If I get Swarga after death, means I must be surviving death. And it means that death is not the end of Jiva. Death is but changing of the body. Thus, one of the facts revealed through Karmakanda is Deha Vyatirikta Jivaha Asti. Now, Shankaracharya asked the question to Purva Mimamsakas, do you accept this fact or not? Suppose they say, I accept this as a fact. And then he will have to accept that Veda can reveal the fact and the Veda need not deal with only action. In this case, Veda can be pramanam for facts also. Suppose they say, I don't accept it as a fact. Then we will say, why do you do rituals for Swarga? Because you won't survive as per your own argument. Thus Acharya corners and establishes that the Karmakanda reveals Siddha Vastu. Here a small diversion also comes. For if the Purva Mimamsaka accepts that there is no doubt Jiva is different from body surviving death, it is fact that I accept it as it is fact, and yet they say Veda does not reveal it. They say that this info can be gained without the help of Veda by logic. They argue that by logic a person can know that Jiva survives death, and this can be proved by logic that Veda is not pramana. Then Shankaracharya refutes the reasoning logically and says that we can never prove that survival of Jiva after death. If anybody uses the reasoning, then Acharya says, then he can show the loopholes in such reasoning. We get the clue that the past or future Janma, etc. cannot be established scientifically or logically according to Acharya. If it cannot be established, then how do we know No, it only through Veda Pramana. Does that mean the Veda Pramana is logical? So it is neither logical nor illogical. That does not mean Punarjanma can neither be logically established nor dismissed also. This is our view. It is Tarka Avishayaha. This is not within the bounds of Tarka. It is not within the scope of Tarka and logic. That is why we call it Apaurushaya Vishayaha. Shankaracharya himself raises a question. If logically it cannot be established, how come often in the scriptures we ourselves use logic? Then he says, our reasoning is supportive reasoning and not establishing reasoning. It is sambhavanaiti. So reasoning is twofold. One is supporting the logic and second is establishing the logic. For Punarjanma, we have supporting logic only. That is number one. Then he establishes that the karmakanda cannot help in giving moksha. It is a pramanam in revealing certain fact. He does not go by logic and quotes from Brihadaranyaka Upanishad itself. This is a peculiar trait. The highest benefit of karmakanda is Brahmaloka. And he shows Brahmaloka itself is samsara. We have enough statements to show that. Logically also, we have established that karma and karma palam are limited. Therefore, we conclude that the limitless moksha cannot be gained by limited karmas. This is the second point. And the third and equally important point is, even though karmakanda cannot give moksha, we should not dismiss karmakanda as useless because karmakanda alone prepares us and brings us to jnanam. Thus, karmakanda and jnanakanda have special relationship called upaya upaya sambandha. Upaya means a means. Upaya means an end. So, sadhana sadhya, we can call it. That means karmakanda alone prepares one for jnanam by giving him jnana yogyata, which alone can give jnanam. Karmakanda has got a plus point because of this. At the same time, it has got a minus point also. It can take to the doorstep of jnanam, and beyond that, it is useless. If one overemphasizes karma, thinking that it will give moksha, he is wrong. Or if somebody underemphasizes karmakanda, it is also equally dangerous. Only when we clearly know the plus and minus points, we will know all about karmakanda properly. It is like a boat that takes a person to the other side of the river. I enter the boat to cross the river. After reaching the shore, I must renounce the boat. This is called proper utilization of upaya, which is karmakanda. There are two extreme views. One is what? After all, we have to renounce the boat. Then why should we enter into the boat at all? This is the argument of some people. And the other view is that one never renounces the boat after reaching shore. This is the view of some other people. Both of them will never reach the shore. Therefore, every seeker should be careful towards the attitude towards karmakanda. What is the use of reaching the shore if he refuses to get off the boat? So, no useful purpose will be served by crossing the river by using the boat. The conduct of both of them is not proper. So, most of us get into one or the other of the traps. One is that you get over attached to karma and develop raga towards karmakanda, and the other attachment. The other person gets into a problem of dvesha and he always criticizes karmakanda. Once I develop either raga or dvesha, my listening will become a filtered listening. When I have raga for karmakanda, I appreciated the pluses of karmakanda and enjoy its glory. But when scriptures give limitations of karmakanda, I will not appreciate that. Similarly, the other person also, when I talk about limitation of karmakanda, he will listen. When we talk about chitta shuddhi through karma, he will not. We may get trapped in raga trap or dvesha trap. We should avoid either. We should utilize karmakanda judiciously and go to the next step. And the still verse is, not only we develop raga dvesha, some may develop complexes also. Some of them are used to rituals and they argue ritual is important, required for chitta shuddhi. They look down upon other people who are not agreeable to do rituals. Thus, both groups develop such complexes and look down upon the other. Still worse is the last trap. When I love rituals, I try to make others also to do them and start the conversion program.
There are some others who wish to restrain people from rituals and pujas. We must avoid raga, dvesha, and we should never criticize different views because different people are placed at different levels. I may need karmakanda, the other may not. I may not need karmakanda while the other person might. So give advice only when asked. As far as I am concerned, I avoid raga, dvesha, and I utilize karmakanda properly. That's all one should be thinking. When we talk about karmakanda, we don't talk about rituals alone. Ritual is one type of karma. If the ritual alone forms the karma, what will happen to people belonging to other varnas who cannot get any benefit at all? Therefore, remember, when we say karmakanda, we mean swadharma anushtana. It is performance of one's duties with Ishwara arpana buddhi and Ishwara prasada buddhi, the Gita language again. Therefore, Shankaracharya directs us not to put down karmakanda and advises not to criticize it as useless. Use it judiciously. Do karmakanda and take steps to enter jnanakanda. So this is Sambandha Bhashyam that we find it in the introduction of this Upanishad Bhashyam. Now we will enter into the Shanti Pata of this Upanishad. Om Purnamata Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. We recite this mantra all the time and we also know this mantra very well when we did the other Upanishad of this same Veda, Isavasya Upanishad, long ago. So we know every Upanishad begins with the Shanti Pada. And the purpose is to remove the obstacles in completion of the study of Brahma Vidya. Like, for example, do a Vigneshwara Puja. So we saw that Shanti Pada varies from Veda to Veda. And for Shukla Yajur Veda, the Shanti Pada is this particular Purnamadaha, Purnamidam. So most importantly, it should be properly chanted also, because there is a lot of the swaras and all, they will vary. So here, in Shantipada itself, the Vedantic teaching is summarized, unlike other Shantipadas. This happens to be unique, in which Vedantic teaching itself is summarized in the Shantipada. In other Shantipadas, we pray to the Lord to remove obstacles at physical level and mental level, and request our sense organs be healthy and free from all obstacles. But in the Shantipada, there is no prayer asking for anything. It is a statement of fact here, which is Brahma Satyam, Jagan Mithya, very unique with respect to Brihadaranyaka Upanishad Shantipada. As such, the meaning of the Shantipada we have seen elaborately during our webinars on Isavasya Upanishad long ago. You may please refer to those lectures. They are already in the site. Even then, I will just give a summary here of the word by word meaning, just for sake of completion. Adaha Purnam, the Ishwara is infinite. Idam Purnam, this Jiva is infinite from the standpoint view of Atma. Then Purnat, from infinite Ishwara, Purnam, this infinite Jiva, Udachyate, is born. Then Purnam, when the infinite Atma, Purnasya of the infinite Jiva, then the infinite Atma of the infinite Jiva, Adaya, when it is separated, Purnameva, infinite Atma alone, avasishyate, remains. Anatma has no existence. So in the second line, corollary also is important. That is important. That is, when Atma is removed from the Jiva, what do we expect to remain? We think Anatma will remain. But what does Upanishad say? When Atma is separated from Jiva, Atma alone remains and Anatma does not remain. What is the idea? When Atma is separated, the Anatma cannot exist. And Anatma depends upon Atma for its existence. Therefore, Anatma is not there. When you say Anatma is Mithya, you can extend it to both Jiva and Ishwara. In case of Jiva, Shariram is Anatma. For Ishwara, the total cosmic prapancha is Anatma. Therefore, the words Ishwara and Jiva and all that things I am using very liberally because we have gone through 9 Upanishads, so we should be very familiar with them now. Therefore, the conclusion is Jiva Shariram Veshti, Ishwara Shariram Samashti Prapancha, Ubayam Abhi Mithya. Both Shariras are Mithya. Therefore, Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya, Jivo Brahma Ivanapara. The idea comes out of the seemingly simple looking Shanti Pada. Incidentally, the Shanti Pada does not occur in the beginning of Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Actually, it occurs in the beginning of the fifth chapter, in the beginning of the Kilakanda. So, we get the Purnamada mantra and Shankaracharya comments upon it there only, instead in the beginning of the Upanishad. So, since Shantipada has become standard, we put it in the beginning of the Upanishad during our discussion. Now, we will enter into the text of Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Now, I have told earlier that the text consists of six chapters. The first two are called Madhu or Upadeshakanda, and the second is called Munikanda or Upapattikanda, and the last called Kilakanda or Upasanakanda. Now, we enter the first kanda, namely the Madhu Kanda or Upadeshakanda, which consists of two chapters, I already mentioned. So, Upadesha means what? The whispering a mantra in the ears. But here Upadesha is teaching. Teaching is to reveal the Brahman or Atman, or unfolding the Brahman or Atman, and such a teaching is called Upadesha. So, then there is an important analysis which we have seen many times, the Adhyaropa and Apavada analysis. Since Brahman or Atman is extremely subtle, to directly reveal Atman, Upanishad uses a special methodology or special prakriya or special sampradaya. We have seen this methodology actually used by our traditional gurus before also, namely the well-known Adhyaropa Apavada method. And revealing Brahman through this method is called Upadesha. Now, let us see, now in this particular section, what is Adhyaropa and Apavada method? Just let us refresh it. To understand Adhyaropa Apavada method, we should know three important words in Vedanta. We have already done all this, I am just only refreshing. They are Asat, Sat and Mithya. These three words should be known well. Asat, Sat and Mithya. Asat means that which is permanently non-existent, ever non-existent. And sometimes it is called Trikale Avidyaman, Asat. And it is also called the Tuchya. And Sat, we have used the word Tuchyam also earlier. And Sat means which is permanently existent. In Sanskrit, Trikale Api Vidyama, Sat. And third is Mithya, which is temporarily existent. It is not Asat because it is not permanently non-existent. It is not Sat because it is not permanently existent. Being temporarily existent, it is Sat Asat Vilakshana. And it is called Mithya. Now we will go to the next point. When you take a temporarily existing thing, for example a pot, we discover as an important thing, the temporarily existent pot is born out of clay. It resolves back into clay. Not only that, the pot exists also because of the clay alone. The temporary pot, born out of clay, resolves into clay, and what is important is, the temporary pot exists because of the clay. Therefore, we can say that the temporary pot has got a dependent existence. Or to put in another language, it does not have its own independent existence. From this, we can make a generalization. All temporary things enjoy dependent existence. And therefore, they don't have their own independent existence. From this we can say, all mithya vastus or temporary things enjoy only dependent existence. They do not have their independent existence. This is the second point. And now let's go to the next point. All temporary things have got dependent existence, which means that they depend upon another thing for existence. Suppose other thing is also temporary, then that temporary thing will depend upon another for its existence, and therefore ultimately all temporary things should depend upon one thing. And that one thing that is permanently, independently existent vastu, that is called Sat. That Sat we call it by another name, Satyam. Therefore the final point is that all mithya vastus depend upon Satyam or Sat. These three, Sat, Asat and Mithya, Mithya depends on another for its existence, Mithya depends ultimately upon Satyam alone, that we should remember. Now we are going to apply the knowledge for our Adhyaropa Apavada method, this knowledge. Adhyaropa means the Shruti accepting the existence of the world. Shruti accepting the existing of the world, that is Adhyaropa. And accepting its existence, Shruti talks about its origination. The existence of varieties in the world, the existence of the means, the existence of the ends, the existence of laws governing the means and the ends, all of them. Such acceptance is called Adhyaropa. Having done Adhyaropa, after accepting all these, first, then the mischievous Shruti, what it does, later negates the very existence of the world itself. Thus, it goes on negating everything that exists. The whole world and its existence it negates. So, Adhyaropa is the acceptance of the world and Apavada is the negation of the world. Now, let us apply our previous principle. Since Shruti accepts the existence of the world cannot be called Asat because it accepts. It is not available at all three times. While the Shruti accepts the world's existence, in the Shruti's vision, the world does not come under Asat because it is accepting. Even though we know it's not available for three times, but the Shruti it has accepted it. So it doesn't come under Asat also. Now we will see whether world can be accommodated under the second part. That is Asat, Sat and Mithya, right? So in the later portion of the teaching, Shruti negates the whole creation and so it cannot be categorized under the Sat also. By definition, Sat is that which is permanently existent and that which cannot be dismissed or that which cannot be destroyed or cannot be segregated, negated. Therefore, by negating the creation, Shruti wants to show that it does not accept the world as Sat also. So, in the light of this teaching, the world will have to be accommodated only in the category of Mithya. It is neither Sat nor Asat. It should be Mithya. So we have three slots. In Adhyaropa, Asat slot is gone. In Apavada, Sat slot is gone. So the poor world has to be accommodated only in the third slot, which is in Vedantic term is called Mithya. That which seems to be real, though not real. That it has negated the whole world as Mithya by Adhyaropa Apavada method, while establishing the Satyam as its Adhishtanam or Substratum. The question is, what is that Satyam? We cannot take anything in the world as Satyam. Why? The whole world has been bundled as Mithya. Therefore, whatever does not fall within the world, whatever is outside the possibility of the world, that remaining Vastu alone must be Satyam. And when everything is negated, who and what remains? When everything is negated, I, the observer of everything alone remain in an unnegated form, in Chaitanya Rupena, Sakshi Rupena, I alone will remain the subject. Therefore, when the whole world is negated, Satyam becomes evident as myself, not the body, myself. Vedanta sees whole world as Mithya. At the same time, I, the reminder, is viewed as Satyam. It means the Satyam, Chaitanya, Atma alone remains. And then ultimately we arrive at two things. One is Mithya Prapancha and the other is Satyam. Satyam I. Mithya Prapancha and Satyam I. Through this Adhyaropa and Apavada method. So we said that Mithya Vastu does not have its own independent existence. And therefore it is as good as non-existent. It is like one fellow is rich with borrowed money. Somebody is rich. He is a very rich person. He has all borrowed money. A lot of people we know. So originally, he is poor, dependent on another, is as good as non-existence. Therefore, Mithya Prapancha is as good as non-existent because such Prapancha does not exist separate from Satyam. Just as the pot is as good as non-existent. Because the pot cannot exist separate from the clay, therefore, what is left out is clay, the Satyam that is at the substratum. I alone am left and the Mithya Prapancha is as good as not there. These arguments are all very familiar to us. Therefore, I get a new name. This is called Nishprapancham Atmatattvam. Nishprapancham Atmatattvam. So, what is the benefit I derive by gaining this knowledge? The benefit is that once I know that the entire Prapancha is Mithya and I am also aware that I am Satyam, the knowledge makes me realize that Mithya cannot affect me. The Satyam, it cannot affect me, the Atma. No pot can ever destroy the clay. Ornaments cannot destroy the gold. Therefore, ornaments cannot threaten the gold. The ornaments are but slaves only to the gold. Ornaments must own up that they survive because of the existence of gold. This knowledge is one of the many benefits which we will take later also in our discussions. So this Adhyaropa Apavada method is the topic of Upadesha Kanda. Madhukanda, Upadesha Kanda. The first chapter deals with Adhyaropa part of the teaching and the second chapter deals with the Apavada part. Thus the second chapter, the two chapters together deal with Adhyaropa and Apavada portions and are named as Upadesha Kanda of the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Now let us take up the Adhyaropa discussion. First, the whole creation is accepted as it were. And everything in the creation is accepted in toto. So the first chapter accepts the world. Here, while accepting it, the world is divided into two broad. One of the two portions is avyakrita prapancha or avyakta prapancha, the unmanifest form of creation. And the second one is vyakrita prapancha or vyakta prapancha. So incidentally, later the Upanishad calls the avyakrita prapancha by another name, which is nama rupa karmatmakam avyakrita prapancha. This is also, we are familiar with this name, nama rupa karmatmakam. So it is only name, form and function. What is a pot and what is a bangle? It is nothing but name, a form and a function. And what is the chain? Also name, form and function. Thus avyakrita prapancha can be divided into three as nama, rupa and karma. Karma is function. So this avyakrita prapancha is subdivided into sadhana prapancha and sadhya prapancha. Thus the whole universe is avyakrita universe in the form of sadhanam, the means, and in the form of sadhyam, the end. So the first chapter talks about sadhyam and sadhanam under the category of vyakrita. So Upanishad also talks about avyakrita. And in the first chapter, first three sections deal with varieties of sadhanas. Each section is called by the name a brahmana. So in the first chapter, brahmana is not any caste or anything. It's the name or the section. So in the first chapter, the first three brahmanas deal with the sadhana prapancha or sadhanani. And varieties of means and ends are there. But Shruti is bothered about the means and ends discussed in the Vedas. It does not bother about the means and ends of Laukika Prapancha at all. And in this sadhana section, we get three different upasanas. They are Ashva Upasana, Agni Upasana and Prana Upasana. These sadhanas are discussed in three sections. Later, the sadhyam, the end, will be discussed as the Hiranyagarbha Padam. And that is Brahma Loka Prapti. Here we will continue to the beginning portion. So this is how the structure of this particular section is. So the first Brahmanam is called Ashva Brahmanam. Ashva Upasana is the topic. Ashva means horse. And therefore it is called Ashva Brahmanam. A horse Upasana is the topic here. First we are going to do Upasana on a horse. Incidentally, some idea about the Upasana, which is of two types. These are all things also familiar to us. I am only refreshing. One is called Swatantra Upasana and the second one is called Karmanga Upasana. We have seen this also in Chandrika. So Swatantra Upasana is a meditation done independently to gain some benefits. And the second one is called Karmanga Upasana and it is not an independent meditation but it is part of a ritual, a karma. Here the ritual alone is mukhyam, important. That is the Agni that is mukhyam. And the ritual alone will give the palam also. But the ritual has got many secondary portions or satellite rituals. Among them, one portion is named as Upasana, Karmanga Upasana. For example, when you want to do the Vishnu Sahasranama Laksharchana, you have done Avahanam, etc. But before you start Archana, you do Dhyanam also. So the Archana is main part. But as a part, Dhyanam also becomes a Karma Angam. Thus, Karmanga Upasana is secondary and it is Upasana part of the main ritual. And Swatantra Upasana is an independent meditation. Of this, the Ashva Upasana is discussed in this particular chapter. Really speaking, it is a karmanga upasana only. A meditation, part of a big ritual, Ashwamedha Yaga. Ashwamedha Yaga is a big ritual. And as part of that thing, this upasana, Ashwa upasana is done. So which is supposed to be one of the greatest of all rituals is Ashwamedha Yaga. Enumerated in the Veda Purva portion, Karmakanda portion. We used to say, one has done from Agnihotram to Ashwamedha. Person has done so proficient, done so many things. Right from Agnihotram, he started with that and he has done all the way up to Ashwamedha Agni. So Agnihotram is treated as basic and fundamental ritual. Ashwamedha is considered as the highest ritual. Here all rituals are included. In that Ashwamedha Yaga, the horse has to be used. In fact, Medha. So Ashwamedha Yaga, when they use a horse as part of the ritual, the horse must be meditated upon. So Ashwa Upasana is a part of an Ashwamedha Yaga. But there is a problem here. What is the problem? Ashwamedha Yaga is prescribed only for Kshatriyas or the kings or the warriors. Therefore, other people are anadhikaris, not entitled to Ashwamedha Yaga. Suppose they are interested in that result, then what to do? Even though he might be a brahmana, he cannot do the ritual, Ashwamedha Yaga ritual for himself. Then Veda itself comes with a compromise. In the case of other people, other than Kshatriya, the Ashwamedha Yaga palam can be attained if they do Ashwa Upasana only. Ashwa Upasana portion, all the brahmanas can do, everybody can do. This upasana, who have adhikaritam can do. So this upasana is capable of giving Ashwamedha Yaga palam. This is not for Kshatriya. This upasana is not for Kshatriya. He can do the yaga, not this portion. Therefore, in their case, Ashwa upasana becomes Swatantra upasana for these people, other people. So no karma is involved here. It is this Ashwa upasana that is being talked about in the first section called Ashwa Brahmana. Then what is the benefit one will gain by meditating on Ashwa the horse? We say, even though Ashwa is to be meditated upon, the Ashwa is not meditated upon as Ashwa, but we look upon Ashwa as the Virat Swarupam, as the Virat. And therefore, it becomes the Virat Upasana. Ashwe Virat Upasana, it is called. Incidentally, Anandagiri, one of the sub-commentators, he questions as to how can one do Ashwa Upasana when Ashwa itself is not there in front. Because you are not doing an Ashwamedha Yaga. In the Ashwamedha Yaga, Ashwa is in front. But you are doing Ashwa Upasana somewhere else with no horse in front. Then he says, one should think himself as Ashwa when various parts of Ashwa are mentioned corresponding to his own body parts. Thus, Ashwe Virat Upasana is the topic of first section, like Saligrama and Linga, Shivalinga, or turmeric powder for Mahaganapati, so Hairamba Ganapati, and all that to say Haridra Ganapati. So Haridra Bimbe, Vinayaka Evam, Ashwe Virat. So same way, please meditate upon. So every part of horse is taken and it is seen as Virat Avayavam, organ part. Thus, you have to see the front portion, the back portion, etc. When I visualize the horse, I visualize the whole cosmos, Virat. This is Ashwe Virat Upasana. And what is the vision we should have when we see the Ashwa? And that is the Virat Darshanam or the Prajapati Darshanam. It is here called Upasana. So this is the topic of the first Brahmana. And the Upanishad states, which part of Virat relates to which part of the horse? That is our discussion. Virat means the Vishwarupa, the world. Virat is not another specific deity like Rama or Krishna. Virat is universe as Ishvara. Each part of the horse should be seen one part of the universe. Therefore, when you see the horse, it is as good as seeing the entire cosmos. And what is the benefit for this upasana? Essentially, mind expands because we conceive and think of the whole cosmos as one, which we generally don't normally. We don't see the sun and there is no question of seeing other things. We don't see the nature as nature. Here there is a chance to conceive the cosmic makeup. Thus, the expansion of the mind is the purpose of the upasana. Our idea is what? That we should think of the total in one form or the other. Sometime of the day, at least we should be able to think. So the purpose of the Virat Upasana is to expand the mind. Therefore, we are not particular about the specific upasana, but only we talk about the expansion of the mind by thinking the total in one form or the other. Now, this is the brief introduction with respect to the various aspects covered in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Now, we will enter into the first kanda, namely the Madhukanda, Mantra 1. This is called Ashwamedha Brahmana. Actually, incidentally, I wanted to just check, because the portion is very large, it might take with only one class in a week, it might take long time. So I wonder whether I can lengthen the lecture to 1.5 hours than just 1 hour. If it is okay, you know, then we will be able to cover it a little faster. So that is the one reason why. So next, maybe I don't know, because we have not informed the people earlier, so we may do it in 1 hour this time. For next time onwards, the length of the lecture is going to be for 1.5 hours. Now let us enter the first mantra of the first Brahmana, Ashwamedha Brahmana. Ushava Ashwasya Medyasya Shiraha Suryas Chakshuhum Vata Pranaham Vyatam Agnirvaishwa Naraham Samvatsara Atma Ashwasya Medyasya Dhyauhu Prishtam Antarikshamudaram Prithiviva Prithivipajasyam Disha Parshve Avantara Disha Parshavayam Ritavongani Masaschardha Masascha Parvani Ahoratrani Pratishta Nakshatrani Astini Navomagum Sani Uvadyagum Sikataham Sindavogudam Yakrucham Klomanascha Parvatam Oshadayascha Vanaspadayascha Lomani Udyan Purvardho Nimlochang Jaganardhom Yadvijrampate Tadvidyotate Yadvidhunutem Tatstanayatim Yan Mehatim Tadvarshatim Vage Vasya Vak. This is the first mantra. And as I told you, I didn't recite it with the swaras. It is to be recited with the swaras. If you see the text, it will have the swaras marked. Not many Upanishads will have the swaras. The mantras will be with swaras, but here it is. And in this mantra, each part of the horse is seen as part of cosmos, the universe. Ashwasya medyasya. Medya means sacred. The ashwa, purified with the mantras for use in the yaga. So whatever is used in the yaga is purified. So that is first. So this medya. So, we will see essential meaning without going into the word for word translation explanation, because this is fairly straightforward. The head of the horse is compared to dawn, Ushaskala, early morning. And the eye is compared to the sun, Chakshuhu, sun. Prana is the wind. The mouth is Vaishwanara Agni, sacred fire. And the body is the Samvatsara, the year, the time. The back portion is the heavens. The stomach, udaram, is the sky. The hoof of the horse is the earth. The sides, parshva. So, both the parts are the primary directions, east, west, north and south. The ribs are the secondary directions, northeast, northwest, southeast, southwest. And the other limbs of the horse are said to be the seasons, like summer, spring, monsoon, winter, all of them. And the joints, they are the mouths, months and the fortnights. And the legs are the days and nights. Bones are the stars. Muscles are the space. Then undigested food in the stomach is sand. Then the nadi or the nerves are the rivers. The protruding muscles on the sides of the heart are mountains. The hairs are trees and herbs. The front portion of the body is the rising sun. Former part of the body is the forenoon. And the back portion represents the setting sun. The latter part of the day, afternoon, the stretching of the body is the lightning. Shaking of the body of the horse with the sound is thunder. And urination is compared to the rains. Finally, the walk, the speech, whatever sound that makes is the speech of the horse, is the speech of Virat. So we simplified the whole thing, and Shankaracharya in his Bhashyam is justifying the comparison of each one of the parts. The only difference is, in the Veda, we take hearts and other things for upasana. But we find similar upasanas in the Puranas, like Bhagavatam also. there, instead of taking hearts, cow, etc., we take Krishna Shariram or Vishnu Shariram, all that. In Bhagavatam, from the toe onwards up to the tip of the head, we take the symbols in the human form. But whereas in Vedas, we take cow, hearts and all that thing for the Upasana. In Puranas, body of the Lord is taken for the Upasana. Here we are taking all these animals, hearts, cow and all that. So ultimately, the purpose of this is what? We have to visualize the cosmic makeup. So the first word, Usha, stands for dawn. Now, the next mantra, we can see that perhaps the next mantra also briefly, and then I will conclude, so that will conclude this chapter, this particular thing. Aharvam ashvam purastan mahima anvajayata tasya purve samudre yoni ratri renam paschan mahima anvajayata tasya pare samudre yonihi etauva ashvam mahimanav mahimanavavitaha sambhavuvatuho khayo bhutva devan avahatvajim gandharvan arvasuran ashvo manushyan samudraye vasya banduho samudre yonihi. So this is with this the Ashwabrahmanam, the first Brahmanam is concluded with this shloka. So here also the upasana continues. In Ashwamedha Yaga, in front of the Ashwa, they keep a golden cup. The cup is called Purastad Mahima. Purastad means in front. They keep one. And there is Paschad Mahima, kept behind, made up of silver. The one kept in the front is made up of gold. The one kept behind is called silver. It's made up of silver. How do you do the upasana? Day and night, Ahaha and Ratrihi, they are seen as the Purastad and Paschad Mahima. The Upanishad says, the day which is born out of eastern ocean, because the sun rises from the eastern ocean, and therefore origin of the day is Purva Samudraha. So, and the origin of the night is western ocean. So, the day from eastern ocean is visualized as gold cup, and night from the western ocean is a silver cup. So, this forms one, one should meditate in this form, on Ashwa. After this, the meditation part. Then the Upanishad glorifies the Ashwa itself. It is Ashwa Stuti. You should glorify the one on which you meditate. That is a convention. There is a Mimamsa rule for this also. What is the glorification? The horse is the vehicle of all Devas, Asuras, Gandharvas, Manushyas, for all this vehicle. So, the horse is a great vehicle. Finally, the Upanishad concludes saying that the origin of the horse is the ocean. This is used in a pun, because horse has two meanings. Horse as a horse and as Virat also. And the word Samudra also has got two meanings. One is ocean, another is Ishvara. So therefore, Ashwa, the horse, has got its source in Samudra. The horse born out of the ocean as per mythology also, because mythology is much later. So one of the names of the horse is Saindavam. So Saindavam also means salt. Both are born from ocean. Now the second meaning is, Ashwa the Virat is born out of ocean, the Ishvara or Maya Sahitam Brahma. And how can you get the meaning of Ishvara from Samudra then? Shankaracharya gives a very beautiful derivation for the word Samudra. See, Bhutani Samudpadya Dravanti Asmin Iti Samudraha. From where all the beings originate, Bhutani, and results into is Ishvara. Samudra is called Ishvara here. The rivers originate and resolve in Samudra. The source or origination and the resolution ground of everything is called Samudra. It can be applied to ocean. It is the source and resolution ground of all rivers. Ishvara is Samudraham as the source and resolution ground of all living beings. Not only that, it is Bandhu. Sthiti Karanam. Samudra Srishti Laya Karanam. Bandhu Sthiti Karanam. Therefore, Ishvara alone is Srishti, Sthiti and Laya Karanam of this Virat. And therefore, the Ashwa is very great. These are all very indirectly connecting so many things. With this Stuti, Ashwa Upasana Brahmanam is over. So, Shankaracharya, he adds a note here. Since the Palashruti is not given, he says that it cannot be total Upasana in itself and should be combined with the next Upasana, which is Agni Upasana. So Agni and Ashwa Upasana should be done together. The Agni is not any Agni. This is also Agni of Ashwamedha Yajna. Here also the previous Upasana holds good. So, Kshatriya has to do as part of Ashwamedha Yaga and he cannot do Agni Upasana independently. But both are Virat Upasanas. In one, Ashwa is symbol. In the other, Agni is symbol. Before talking about the Upasana, the Upanishad talks about the glory of the Agni. The origin of Agni is first talked about. It has got sacred lineage and origin, all those things. So, Upanishad here takes Srishti topic briefly. In the first 5 mantras, Srishti is not for the purpose of Srishti elaboration, but it is glorification of Agni, which we are going to see next in the next mantra. So, it's peculiar, but one should not be bothered by the Srishti story described here, but that is how it is given. With this now, we will stop this. The first Brahmanam is over, and we will take the next Brahmanam, Agni Brahmanam, in the next webinar. Yo Vedado Swara Prokto Vedante Cha Pratishthitah Tasya Prakriti Linasya Parasa Maheshwara Sri Krishna Namastu Narayana.